Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another Lights On listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free.
The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Dr. Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse Baptist Church in Santa Maria, California, and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage. What happened with these elections? It's not the first time I've called a wave outside only to paddle out furiously to find a roller. The Dems took the House, barely. But were the socialists shellacked, as I heard one pundit opine? What does this midterm mean for conservatives going forward? It's disappointing to be sure. But my friend, it's not even close to devastating. Let's take a look. The shooting in Thousand Oaks. Oh my. 13 killed, 1 wounded, 15 others received injuries trying to flee the scene. The suspect was a decorated Marine vet. I mean, this is practically made to order for the gun grabber crowd. But there's one problem. Wait for it. Crazy anti-abortion activist Rachelle Shannon, do you remember her, has completed her 25 years in prison for shooting and wounding George Baby Killer Tiller and a string of firebomb attacks at abortion clinics back in 1993. And hey, aren't these examples of the brain masseur getting it wrong again? I challenge anyone to show me a Christian conservative who does this sort of evil, and right away the devil throws a decorated Marine vet at an anti-abortion nutcase into my face, right? Wrong. You gotta wait for it, though. Sessions resigns, as he promised he would do after the midterm elections. Whitaker is holding the helm until a permanent appointment is made. The left is frothing at the mouth over the prospect that Trump will appoint an attorney general that will actually bring Mueller under control. Give him some oversight. Put somebody over him. You know, he ought to be made accountable for his behavior and his actions. The latest ploy has been to float the rumor that Mueller is wrapping up his case. He's writing his final brief. Yeah, right. That brief must be longer than War and Peace. Actually, probably it reads more like Vanity Fair, because this guy's been writing this thing for, what, 2 months? Well, that's almost certainly more than I can get in today, so we'll stop right there. Friends, let's get some heavenly perspective on all of this. It's time for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
You know, I think I'll dedicate the entire second segment to my analysis on the midterm elections. I assure you, it's worth a listen. For my Christian conservative core members, if you want a Christian perspective on the election and our response to it, I recommend you go to our website, santamarialighthouse.org. Find the resources menu, scroll down to, I think it says sermons and lessons or something like that, and then that'll have a menu that drops down. You can find Issachar Report, and then click on that. You'll find that message. I think it was very helpful to all who heard it. I must begin, however, today with the Thousand Oaks shooting at Borderline Bar and Grill. Now, Becky and I used to truck around Thousand Oaks a lot back in the day. Never went to this particular institution, but we liked a place, that, you know, some kind of a rib place out there. I forget the name of it now. Bandit's Ribs or something like that. Anyway, we really enjoyed that place and went there often. And a few other places. But anyway, apparently it was college night at this bar, so it was packed with college kids. 12 were killed, 1 wounded, 15 others were injured trying to avoid the bullets. The suspect, it turns out, was a decorated Marine vet, 28 years old, discharged honorably as a corporal in 2013. I understand he was enrolled in college to study sports, and I'm not sure what category, but I understand he dropped out when a 19-year-old got in his face and talked down to him, trying to tell him how to do his job, so he decided that that was not the career for him. Bailed out. He got beat up in a bar back in 2015. In April this year, he was acting out angrily and erratically at home. Authorities were called in. Sheriff Dean tells us they called out our crisis intervention team, our mental health specialist who met with him, talked to him, and cleared him. I don't know. I guess he decided to check out and decided his last glorious act would be to take it out on college kids in a bar. His heart was full of evil, hatred, and murder. It's as sad as that. I read one article that says the shooter entered the bar and deployed smoke bombs before he began shooting his Glock with a high-capacity magazine. Another tells me there was no evidence found of any smoke bombs being used. I don't know where that's going to land. As I mentioned, this is practically made to order for gun grabbers. But there's one glaring and, to the left, a galling problem. This one happened in California, the state that already has the most strict gun laws in the nation. You know, here we have laws against high-capacity magazines, and we have laws against concealed carry without a permit, and we have laws against carrying an unpermitted weapon in public. We have laws against carrying a weapon in a bar. We have public places. We have laws and laws and laws, and this guy broke so many laws. And that's not supposed to happen. If you pass a law, that's supposed to fix the problem, right? California was safe from this sort of thing because we pass laws. But here's the thing. Laws are obeyed by law-abiding citizens. Guys that want to take a gun into a bar and kill people are, well, you know, not law-abiding. Go figure. In fact, it's reasonable to argue that California's laws have created the environment for this sort of thing to happen. It was only a matter of time. There was no one there to stop this fella. But a gun did finally stop it. You know, when the guns arrived, this fella soon saw it was time to, well, check out. So he shot himself. These things, ironically, are always stopped by guns, one way or the other. A while back, I warned my fellow Californians that this was coming to our state. I warned that gun laws don't stop gun violence. There are only two things that effectively stop gun violence. That's the gospel and guns. If the shooter had surrendered to the gospel and submitted to Christ as his Lord, he would not have committed this violent act. If the Thousand Oaks Bar had armed protection on site, it's likely this would have been brought to an earlier resolution. I mean, the idea of outlawing high-capacity magazines, after all, is not to eliminate the possibility that anyone would get shot by a gun in one of these violent attacks. The idea is that it would reduce the shooter's capacity to kill, right? If he's limited to, say, a 10-round magazine, he has to reload after 10, or if he had one in the chamber, 11 shots, giving the innocent a chance to flee, and the good guys an advantage to move in. So how's this working out for us? You know, these violent people can find a high-capacity magazine and purchase and keep it illegally, right? So that law does not work because people who want the high-capacity magazine to commit crimes can get them elsewhere, illegally. In fact, all you do with such law is create a black market for them, really. Isn't that your argument about legalizing drugs, after all, right? Hey, my lib friends, is this not your argument about the uselessness of drug laws? I'll have to address that later. I believe drug control laws are appropriate, but gun control laws are not. Is that a contradiction? No. I don't have time to develop it fully, but let me quickly touch on this. While the law does not eliminate a problem, it does provide for action to be taken by the state against those who violate or who create problems by breaking these laws. Why not have the same approach regarding guns, right? Because despite what the constitutional scholar and logical genius, not Chris Matthews, says, owning a gun is a God-given right. However, becoming a public menace by drug abuse is not. Well, you know, if you want to reduce the capacity for violent people like this character, his name was Ian David Long, by the way. They always have three names, don't they? And the reason for that, no doubt, is that using all three names reduces the number of people that could be identified with the name, right? I mean, you know, there are a whole lot of Oswalds out there, but fewer Lee Oswalds. And then there are probably a lot of Lee Oswalds out there, but very few Lee Harvey Oswalds and so on. Anyway, if you want to reduce the capacity for violent men like Ian David Long to kill, well, then put armed guards trained in defense in public places like this, all right? Like synagogues, October 27, 11 killed in Pittsburgh. Kroger's, right? October 28, 2 killed in Kentucky. Stopped by a man, by the way, carrying a permitted concealed weapon. Yoga studios, November 3rd, 6 shot, 2 killed in Tallahassee. And now a bar, November 7, 12 killed, plus the shooter, that makes 13, in Thousand Oaks, California. Here near my neck of the woods. Curious, isn't it, that the two states that have the most Second Amendment unfriendly laws had the greatest number of deaths from these violent, predatory shooters? Pennsylvania and California. Kentucky and Florida had the least. Oh, well. The evidence proves that when guns arrive in the hands of the good guys, the bad guys very soon stop shooting others. And in most instances, or many at least, they end up shooting themselves. So reason would compel us to think the best way to stop this, or to at least tamper it down, is to plant good guys with guns on the premises, you know, who are ready to defend the public from bad guys with guns. But of course, immediately the gun grabbers start howling their lament, pining for a world in which there are no guns. If only there were no guns. Think about it. Gun laws don't work because bad guys can always find a way to get a gun. So local gun confiscation laws come in to play. Let's just get rid of all the guns, right? Where you have police going door to door collecting guns from citizens, a la Nazi Germany, Stalin's Russia, Pol Pot's Cambodia, and well, you get the idea. So all the guns are confiscated in one town, and well, then robbers from another town come into our town with their gun to prey on those who don't have a gun. These guys always pick gun-free places to do this sort of thing. Or have you ever paid attention to what's going on in Chicago? Don't go all Fort Hood on me. The soldiers were required to have their weapons under lock and key. That shooter knew he would be the only guy with a gun in that environment. These violent predators always go where they can be sure they're safe and have the advantage. So gun laws don't work and gun confiscation won't work. Why? Because there's always somewhere that somebody can go to get a gun. So then you start wanting to confiscate all the guns in the entire state. Well, then people from other states with guns come in. So you have to confiscate all the guns in the entire nation. So people from other nations with guns come in. And finally, we have to go to the ultimate solution, and that will be the banning of all firearms worldwide. So we need a strong man to rise and take over the world and take into his power and control every gun in the world, and all the arms of the world be put under the power of this good man who promises peace, and he'll beat them into plowshares, the drill there. There's a prophecy about this, by the way. A fellow will ride in on a white horse with a bow and no arrows, and he will use the promise of peace when there is no peace, to deceive many, and he will convince people to follow him, and he will take over political power in the earth, and all the forces of arms will be committed to him. He'll get the sword, and once he has it, according to Revelation chapter 6, when he has that sword in his hands, he's going to go on a rampage and use it to destroy 1/4 of the population of the planet. That's where that whole scenario leads. Gun control leads to local gun confiscation, leads to state confiscation, leads to national confiscation, leads to world confiscation, leads to the Antichrist. Oh, perfect. Actually, a lot of truth in that. I got a little bit long here in this particular segment. I'm going to have to close. So much to say, so little time. Chris Matthews says there ought to be a law against saying thoughts and prayers to people who are victims or family of victims of violent crimes. These liberals are off their rockers. It's unbelievable. With their passion to control what everyone does and what everyone says they don't like. He says it ought to be against the law to say thoughts and prayers. You've got to be kidding me. He allows it in some cases. This is well meant. But his guest objected and argued that, no, it's insincere. It's a cop-out. And it's only action that will solve the problem. And the action, of course, is to take away everybody's gun. Well, how about the action I suggested? Put the guns in the good guys' hands and put those good guys in these places of public gatherings and so on. And let's let these fellows know that they're going to meet their maker if they try to pull something like this in our state. Now, I've addressed the thoughts and prayer sentiment in a prior show. Why does this annoy liberals, by the way? Are they thoughtless and prayerless? Oh, my soul. Now, that was a Bob Ross happy accident. Okay. Liberals are annoyed by thoughts and prayers because they prefer an environment where thoughtlessness and prayerlessness prevails. If you think about it, only a thoughtless and prayerless society could ever be duped into accepting the liberal agenda in the first place. And that, my friends, takes us to segment two. Hold on to the break. I'll be right back.
In what ways does the Trump presidency connect with end-time Bible prophecy? Will there be peace in the Middle East? Will ancient Babylon be rebuilt? Will Israel rebuild their temple in Jerusalem? Who is the Antichrist? When will the rapture occur? Dr. Scheidbach is a renowned expert on these and virtually all other questions regarding Bible prophecy, and his answers are 100% supported by the Scripture of Truth. To register for this course, call 805-714-7731 or go to santamarialighthouse.org. Truth, served here, flavored by delectable wit, delicious sarcasm, succulent sagacity. a gourmet meal for the mind. Get ready for your brain massage.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Dr. Jerry Scheidbach, pastor of the Lighthouse Baptist Church in Santa Maria, California, your brain masseur and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singling the enemies on the march, and enemy that would steal from us our liberties. Well, midterms happened, didn't they? I didn't get everything I wanted, that's for sure. I truly hoped for and prayed for a red wave to rip the diseased trees and carry their poisonous fruit out into the sea. Now, those are metaphors you can't appreciate fully unless you've been following my Issachar reports for some time. And by the way, I begin each Sunday night service at the Lighthouse Baptist Church at 6 p.m. with a short Issachar report and a call to prayer for our nation. This part of the service is done by 6:30, and all of you are invited. I did not get everything I prayed for. And I addressed that issue in my special Issachar Report message preached the night after the election, Wednesday night, titled, What Does It All Mean? You can find the audio of that message on our website, santamarialighthouse.org. Click on the Resources menu button, scroll down to Sermons and Studies. Another drop-down appears, scroll down to Issachar Report and click. And you can, by the way, also find me on Twitter or Facebook if you want to view the message or other messages that I preach from our pulpit. You can catch me on Facebook. Some of you might know, you go to your Facebook page and search Jerry Scheidbach or Brain Massage or Lighthouse Baptist Church, any number of those things would get you to me more than likely. Some of you might not know that the Brain Massage Show is posted to our Facebook page and our Twitter pages. So at least until a more honest resource becomes available, someone that is not biased against Christian conservatives and that's not, you know, constantly trying to find some sneaky way to push the homosexual agenda and censor pro-life and pro-marriage messages, you can go to Facebook or Twitter and find me. You can have the show automatically fed to your Facebook or Twitter pages, by the way, or sent to you directly to your mailbox also if you go to our website, brainmassage.net. Let's look at what happened in this midterm election first. It is not the first time I've called a wave outside, only to paddle out to find a roller. The Dems took the House, barely. They picked up 25 seats, I understand. Some of this is still, we're still waiting for some seats to be called. But they've got 25 seats more than Republicans, and there are no independents right now in the House. I heard one pundit say the socialists in the Democratic Party were shellacked. But, you know, two Democratic socialists won their races, at least, that I know about, Ocasio and Bernie. And they won handily, by the way. Ocasio, however you say her name, is tracking about 78% of the vote in her district, and Bernie's bouncing at around 67%. That's pretty solid. And, of course, with Grandpa Bernie, we're talking about Vermont, and, well, you know, it's Vermont. And with Ocasio, she ran in the uber-liberal 14th District of New York. And, you know, that district is like, you know, the liberal side of New York, if you get my meaning. These aspire to be the Übermenschen. That's Nietzsche's Superman of the future who will rise above, quote, conventional Christian morality, and quote, to impose his own values as described by Nietzsche in that famous book, Thus Spake Zarathustra. You know, and Bernie and crazy Ocasio, the far-left radical libs, see their Übermenschen. Anyway, sounds eerie, like, you know, kind of a Hail Hitler sort of thing. Remember, the prophesied beast rises behind the cloak of peace and disarmament and promises to scatter his spoils to all the people. Yeah, all of this is plainly prophesied in the Bible. We'll be going over it in my study in Daniel, which begins, an introduction to that study begins this coming Sunday. I hope to see you in church. Whoa, wait, don't go away. I'm not done with the show. I know I ended with see you in church, but not. What does this midterm mean for conservatives going forward? Well, it's disappointing that we lost the House and that we stipulate. It's not even close, however, to being devastating. Let's take a look at this. First, when the Republicans took control of the House after Obama was elected, it was a devastating blow to the Dems. They lost 60 House seats, and they kind of hung on a little bit in the Senate, but barely. The Republicans picked up 6 seats, which flipped the Senate to GOP control as well, but it was 51-49. It's very close. But in the House, they were pulverized. Before the election, it was GOP 238, DNC 193. That's the way it is right now, by the way. But with this election, the 116th Congress will be, it looks like it's going to be, 218 DNC and 197 GOP. There are 13 House seats and 2 Senate seats still undecided. Republicans have a fair shot at picking up another seat advantage in the Senate and also narrowing the Dem victory in the House by a few more seats. But we'll have to wait and see. When we compare this to what happened to Obama in 2010, there's no comparison. When the Republicans then picked up 60 seats in the House and 6 Senate seats, unheard of. The way Pelosi said might be a tsunami if the Democrats come out to vote. It turned out to be one of those waves that just sort of start foaming along the top ridge and then peter out. Okay, I know my red wave didn't materialize either, but anyway, look at this. Most midterms are not friendly to the party holding the White House. It's one of those weird phenomena that no one has, to my mind, satisfactorily explained, but it does seem to be consistently true. The Democrats lost more seats in the Senate, so the GOP's hold on the Senate is even stronger than it was, and that's not supposed to happen. Usually the Senate doesn't really change in the midterms. So as it stands, it looks like the GOP has 54 seats and the Dems have 46. Now, Trump offered an insightful analysis on all this. And I'm not going to repeat what he's already pointed out, but it is huge for a president's party to gain seats in the Senate in his midterm. While it is virtually understood that his party will lose seats, he actually gained seats in the Senate, though he did lose them in the House. Also, consider the fact that something like 43 Republicans resigned this year. They resigned their seats in this midterm. They bowed out. Some of them simply wanted to move on to other work. That's just good. I think more should do that more regularly. However, to pick this time to do it, not good. Also, we know that many of these were rhinos who were never Trumpers. And I think some of them probably did it as a way to getting a dig in on Trump. So another way to look at this would be to say this election purged a lot of, at least some, never Trumpers from the GOP party. And I think that can be a good thing going forward. For example, Mr. Jeff the Flake, he has declared he's going to do everything he can to hinder Trump's efforts to get in control of that renegade rogue prosecutor Mueller. How foolish is that? Is he not paying attention to what's going on here? I won't have time to jump into that as much as I would like. But let me say that Mueller needs someone to rein him in. If it's embarrassing, really it is, and it needs to be brought under someone's supervision that will provide an honest assessment of what Mueller has done, and listen, act on all the evidence that has been revealed about Hillary and Obama and their obstruction of justice and their interference in that election. Now, Trump needs to put his foot down. I'm glad Sessions is out. So the conservative Republicans have actually increased their strength in Congress, right? They actually have. The Dems have nothing like a supermajority, and they're more weak as a majority party than the Republicans were when they held it. So if the Republicans are willing to use the filibuster and other means, they can hinder the Dems from doing too much damage between now and 2020. If they'll just do it, right? I think some of this is honest because these gopers, as I like to call them, are not, you know, if you hear the majority leader right now talk, it's almost as if he's glad they lost. It's like he's more comfortable in the minority position. I think it's because, my friend, in that position, the expectations are so low. They're not expected to come up and actually do something. They can just interfere and stop things. And we need new blood in there, my friends. So I hope we get a new minority leader. But so far as getting help from Congress to further the president's agenda, well, that's going to be a whole lot harder now. With regard to impeachment, let's take a quick look at that. The Dems have the majority, and in the mind of many, their mandate is to impeach Trump. I think most of us expect the Dems are going to begin impeachment proceedings almost immediately upon the installation of the 116th Congress. All the Congress needs is a simple majority to approve each separate article of impeachment. Well, then it goes to the Senate, and in the Senate, a 3/4 vote is required to actually impeach or to approve the articles of impeachment, and then to declare judgment on the case. I mean, they're the ones who do the sentencing. It seems highly unlikely, given the makeup of the Senate at present. The disturbing takeaway from this election is the rise of the Democratic Socialists in the Democratic Party. Ocasio and Bernie won, and while it's true they won in Uberville, you know, the Democratic Socialists have got a pretty firm foothold in the Democratic Party. Now, this can also turn to our advantage, however. since it reveals what we have known about the Democratic Party for a long time, and that is that they are closet socialists. Certainly many of them are. And a lot of them are without even realizing it. Another disturbing takeaway is the amount of hyper-liberal millionaires that poured millions into this election. I heard it called the green wave. There wasn't a blue or a red wave, but there was certainly a green wave of liberal money that was poured into this election. And they almost took out Ted Cruz. Now, I think Trump saved his seat for him. I'm glad for it. But Bloomberg and Soros, they poured millions into this. I think, $150 million came in from these guys to turn these elections? But sadly, there are a lot of people in America today who are so lazy, they don't do due diligence before they vote. Proposition 6 in California is an example. The wicked California politician who controlled how that proposition was worded and the lying obfuscation on the left that was used against that proposition is shameful. But many people were confused by how the proposition was worded and did not understand that yes meant repeal the gas tax. So the point is, a lot of voters do not take the time to listen carefully, to get educated on what's on the ballot, and to vote with intelligence. And they are susceptible to the influence of propaganda, and they can be swayed by great swelling words of men's spin and outright lies. Take into consideration the media bias flooding these people with their spin and their lies and their fake news. Add to all of this the influence of voter fraud, and believe me, there's a plethora of it, you know, like what is going on in Broward County right now in Florida. Again, when will somebody do something about that nonsense in Broward County? Now, many of these races really are close enough so that voter fraud does tip the scale. All right, I need to close. Final assessment. It could have been much worse, of course. We have the Senate, and that really is the more important victory, since the Senate will ultimately decide any impeachment question, and the Senate confirms justice appointments and treaties and so forth, and it's a very good chance that Trump will get a chance to appoint another justice, maybe two, even before his first term is played out. 43 Republican resignations certainly increased the GOP's vulnerability significantly in this election, and that's unheard of. I've never heard of that happening before. I certainly did overestimate the size of the soft center of the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is a whole lot sicker than I imagined. This election gives us a reality check opportunity. California is in far greater trouble than we thought. And the Democratic Party is a whole lot more sick than I thought. Here's a taste, for example. When Newsom won, he vowed to show the country what progressive governance looks like. Oh, no. You got to be kidding me. Bankrupt state. Least desirable state to live in the hands of the liberals up till now. Our kids' education is second to last when it used to be second to none. And Brown has taken us down this progressive road to where we are today. And now Gavin comes along and says he's determined to be Brown on steroids. Oh, mercy. My message on Wednesday night will help you if you need some heavenly encouragement on how God's people should react to all of this. But you probably noticed not one Republican went into the streets to protest or burn buildings or to riot or get into anyone's face to scream at them or throw Coke in a liberal's face. You don't see any pictures of conservatives falling on their knees, screaming, oh, God, you know, screaming and crying, all that kind of foolishness. Oh, my soul. You know what, folks? That's just not how we roll. But we will roll. And we will continue rolling. I'm out of time. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch. Now you let me know you see they're on. Call 805-314-2114. That's our brain massage message hotline. You can just say lights on or lights off and hang up if you like, or give me a piece of your mind to chew on. I've certainly laid down some of mine for you to chew on. Email me by going to our website at brainmassage.net. That's brainmassage.net. You'll find the contact button and send me an email. So leave me a message or send me an email. But I must bid you adieu. God bless you. God bless America. And I'll see you in church.
For a complete brain massage experience, tune in Saturday at 12 noon